Mr. Gardner, do you have any comments, or?
Just confined in here for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee, Ms. Masnick.
Thanks for coming.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Nice to meet you. So one of these schools, it's in Global, will be an alternative education campus.
That's correct.
But you, and this is a 6 through 12 school, both of them? And you're anticipating like 250 students or 125 for one, 250 for another. How many current students do you have 6 through 12?
At Los Animas?
Yeah.
We, 6 through 12, we have 200 students. Of those 200 students, and I put names to pen yesterday, 17 of them would be what we would consider at risk, needing some other option versus a brick and mortar versus a classroom setting.
Would you expect to attract students from other areas?
Not necessarily. That's not our goal. Our goal for us is not to what you would call suck kids out of other programs. Our goal is to service the kids that are in our programs. We've had conversations around our neighboring schools too. So, but we are looking at we're also looking at a very targeted population of kids who in rural communities usually don't have those opportunities. For example, we had a young girl this year, her mother passed away from a drug overdose in July, and we begged her to come to school because we wanted to know and check in on her every day. She threatened to kill a student, and so at that particular point in time, we had to homebound her. Well, and just like what Mr. Mearden was saying, when we homebound a student, we don't have that wraparound, we don't have that ongoing monitoring, that and that wraparound can be that social emotional development that we're finding that our at-risk kids need.
I understand. Actually, my question though is more about the numbers. I'm wondering about the numbers because 2 6 through 12 schools, and you have currently about 200 students 6 through 12. But
so if I could address
yeah,
it.
Remind me, one of those schools you expect like 150, and one you expect?
We anticipate at least 500 to 600 in the alternative education campus.
500 to 600?
That's just from the need, and that's without actively recruiting.
So there would be some from other areas, yes,
it would be statewide.
Right.
In the immersion schools, we anticipate, again, 150 to 200, and that's primarily driven by a capacity issue of the sites.
Another question I had was, you were talking about, Randy, you were talking about the being in the classroom, doing some dance, art, et cetera, and doing online work, and then something about going to the community center. I'm not clear on where they're going.
These are kids who are serious about dance, and you've heard stories about soccer moms. If you ain't seen nothing if you haven't met a dance mom. These kids are, they're in school, and then they, like I say, they grab a quick bite to eat, and then they're at a private dance studio for another 3 to 4 hours at night, and literally have no time to even turn around. One student was talking about how we're piloting this program this year. We've got two sites, one in Denver and Colorado, one in Colorado Springs. One student was talking about how without the 3G access on her laptop, she would never be able to get the curriculum done because she did it while she was in the car going from one studio to the other, things like that.
But I'm still not clear on what you were talking about.
So they're going to be where, and then they're going to go where? The community dance studios that they go to in the evening are strictly just like when I was playing clarinet in high school, I'd go to a private clarinet lessons.
Those are separate. They're not part of the school.
That's not part of this program.
Okay.
But that's where those kids are and why they need the flexibility in their curriculum.
And what? One other thing. Is there a 10% fee being charged for Summit? Is that 10% per?
So there's a 10% administrative.
Administrative fee. Yeah.
Yes, and that would go to the school district. The other 90% is to implement the program.
Oh. Okay.
Yes, Dr. Flores.
I'm sorry, Randy. Is it really a blended program? You said blended, and do you have enough teachers? I find that usually blended is computer and not enough teachers. And if these kids indeed have issues, with people. Usually that's the issue. And are there enough people that if they haven't bonded, they can bond with, they can speak with, they can... I think that's one of my concerns about online schools, and even if they're blended, I think sometimes there's not enough human beings there to help these kids with the issues that a computer can't. And the other question is, and I'll just, two questions, are you for-profit or are you non-profit?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Hoffman.
Okay, first question. The problem in Colorado is there is no blended learning within the statutes. You're either a brick-and-mortar school or you're an online school. And we've struggled with that issue for at least 10 years now. I would say we are truly a blended model. The immersion schools, clearly, they're there every day with the life coach, and the teachers will be rotating, the academic teachers will be rotating from site to site. The life coach is, we limit that to a 1 to 30, so each life coach will have no more than 30 students. Their job is to, like I said, engage with that student every day, find out what's going on in their life. Are they online? Are they working on their curriculum? Do they have issues? And it's not just academic issues, go talk to your math teacher, it's, I got thrown out of my house last night. I need a place to live. Okay, we can connect you with those resources. So that's the key there. And that's one thing that very few other online programs have. K-12 was starting to do something like that a couple years ago. I don't know if they have. But that really, we've discovered over the years, is what makes an online program as successful as that face-to-face. And then you have the academic teachers. Yes, they have... higher than typical student ratios. We're looking at probably 1 to 150 to 1 to 200, but the curriculum also takes a lot of the kind of menial tasks of a teacher, the grading, things like that, lesson planning, off of the teachers so they don't have to do that, so they can spend more time one-on-one tutoring.
And a
public benefit corporation is a for-profit corporation, but their primary purpose is not profit, it's that public benefit. In some cases, it's public education or education, which means that the shareholders of the company, with a typical for-profit company, the shareholders can sue the company leadership if they don't maximize profit and return on investment. In a public benefit corporation, they cannot sue for that, but they can sue for not pursuing their public benefit. So, it occupies a space in between a nonprofit and a for-profit.
Okay, so you went the for-profit route. Why didn't you go the nonprofit route?
There's a trade-off either way. Nonprofit tends to open up more opportunities for grants, but limits some of the things you can do with the capital. For-profit has some negative connotations, but it provides some incentives, and with the public benefit piece of it, you can still be out there serving the community, and your main goal is not to make a profit.
Okay. Well, for-profit, I do think one teacher to two, this is just a comment, one teacher, 200, I don't like that. And especially with the population, vulnerable students, that is a very high, very, very high teacher-pupil ratio for vulnerable students. So it is for profit. You can get investors to put in more money so that you can get more humans in there. It's a big concern, and especially given the research that has just come out on online schools that are not doing well, and this is nationally. And I know you know the research, so I'm just concerned.
And if I may speak to that also, those are some of those things that we are also ringing through the washing machine as far as what role does Los Angeles play in those decisions that are being made of how kids are being served? And that's definitely some of those pieces that we're still at work with and playing with. You know, because when we see those face-to-face opportunities with those kiddos, and so that's definitely a great conversation that we've been having around what role does Los Angeles play in the decisions around staffing patterns and those types of things.
Dr. Shuffle.
I just had a question about the review rubric. I think I see the rubric, but I don't see any data on it. Is that typical that we wouldn't see the review? I don't know. I see the review rubric, but not the how the application was scored based on the criteria.
Thank you for your question, Dr. Shuffle. So we can clarify that is a rubric that's been used for about the last 5 years, and those criteria are statutory. The response is in the 78 pages. We can pull that out if that's something, a conversation you'd like to continue in August.
Okay. I just wanted to read it, I guess, so I didn't see the data. And then I had a question about the other districts that have worked in our state with Summit Education. Do they work with Falcon or another district? I mean, do you have a sense of your relationship with them and anticipated success and how Los Animas would work with Summit given some of the other districts that
have the only other current school currently operated is Rocky Mountain Digital Academy, which is through the Colorado Digital BOCES. They decided they could probably operate that school for less money than they were paying Summit to do it. I wish them luck. I'm not sure they can do it, but so they voted to not appropriate those funds at the end of this year, so we will no longer be operating it. But while we have been operating it, it is their highest performing online school. Mm-hmm. Under the digital BOCES.
Okay. And can you talk about the difference between ISTA and AIM Global?
Yes, AIM Global is the alternative ed model that will focus on the high-risk students. The immersion schools for science, technology, and the arts is a school designed more for the other end of the bell curve, the gifted and talented, the ones who have a pretty clear idea of where they want to go professionally or in their careers. There will be within the arts track, we've got the dance, which we've been piloting this year and we'll be continuing. We'll be adding a theater track, a film track, and in the Denver site, some circus arts track. Within the science, we'll be offering some anthropology, forensic science, biology, and I forget the fourth one. And then within the technology, it'll be it'll kind of cross over with the film, graphic arts, things like that. But those will be much more, the kind of core academics will be the online curriculum, but the rest of it will be hands-on working with, in forensics, for example, working with the police departments, going out to labs and museums and really doing it hands-on.
Okay, thank you. And Randy, what do you do with Summit? I guess
I'm their chief executive officer.
Okay, great, thank you.
Further questions? Did you have something?
Dr. Shipple, to kind of talk a little bit more about that. You know, one of the things is that I've discovered that because when you have an EMO, which is what Summit is, Educational Management Organization, when they make a contract with a public school, that looks very different than when they make a contract with a charter school. And so that's why I really have hooked my hat on this conversation today around accountability. There are more elements of accountability with a public school in this form of a contract than it is with a charter school.
Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Masnick.
I apologize because I haven't looked at all the documents available to me, but I'm still trying to understand. It's a multi-district online program, and there was a discussion about going to dance. So where is there a learning center such as like Hope Online has where students are housed? Are they going to be in Los Animas schools? I'm trying to figure out just logistically.
The dance studios we currently have and we know we'll be continuing with the one in Denver. It's the sweatshop on Santa Fe in the Arts District. It's also very convenient to some film studio space that Metro operates, which is like a block down. So the film students will be able to use those facilities. We're also looking at a site in Colorado Springs, which is just east of Powers, which would put it in Falcon D49, and possibly, depending on enrollment, another dance studio in Highlands Ranch at Colorado and County Line.
Well, how does yes, that work we will for have, Lawson?
We yeah. will have Learning Center MOUs with the districts for those three.
Okay, what about, how does that affect Los Animas students, though?
So as far as the dance side of things, we don't see that impacting
you
Los Animas.
See, okay.
Initially, we hope that program will grow. What we see impacting and assisting us will be, so we talked about those learning centers, but we'll have learning areas based on population of students. So we've already identified that Los Animas will have a learning area or learning center for students that are enrolled in this program. And you'll probably see that spread out throughout the different areas. So based on population, there'll be life coaches and instructors that will have opportunities to be housed in those areas. And I thank you for answering that question or asking that question, because it leads me to this, and I always want to sound this with everybody. You know, school districts in small communities, we are economic drivers. And sometimes we forget that, yes, we are in the business of educating kids, but we're also economic drivers. And with this type of a program, my district accountability already has put the dots together to say this can be an economic driver in some ways for some of our smaller communities in these rural areas to have opportunities. You know, one of the things that is, I've already been approached by two staff members from Otero Junior College because they cut their part of their CT program. So those people are looking for opportunities to continue to try to teach. And so on the other side of the spectrum, this still can be an economic driver in some forces.
Okay, but I'm still not understanding. Where are these kids in your school district, where are they going to be learning? Are they going to be in buildings in Los Animas or in your school buildings, or are they traveling to Denver? This is what I'm trying to...
Oh, yes. So what we foresee in Los Animas is we see two populations of kids. We do have kids that will probably be within our own building that we'll be servicing, but we have a population of kids who have already dropped out of school. Some of them are in trouble with the law. So we see that that's also going to be kind of an off-site place. We have some building facilities that have space, and so there'll be places within our community where teachers and where life coaches can meet up with these kids and have those relationship building opportunities.
Okay, that makes it a little more clear. My other question is, so Mr. Gardner, are you representing Summit or are you representing the school district?
I represent Summit Education Group.
Okay, and do you have an agreement yet, and how long of a term do you have with Summit?
We are still fine-tuning that agreement. There are a few pieces that we're continuing to work on because we want to strengthen some areas on that agreement. The current agreement meets statutory requirements, but we want to take a look at strengthening some areas on that. The term is for 5 years, but we have a clause that's in that agreement that, you know, if things are not working out from year to year, we still have that ability. And I say year to year, we wouldn't want to stop a program like this in the middle of a year. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely have that ability and that clause in our agreement to have that annual review on the effectiveness of the school. There's also the piece on student performance. And so even through the UIP process and through the accountability, if students are not performing, and that comes out from year to year also, and that's a part of that accountability piece.
All right, thank you.
Oh, and if I might add, the simple fact in Colorado, I think as all of you are aware, you can't have a multi-year fiscal obligation under Tabor. So each and every one of these contracts is subject to non-appropriation by the district. So there's an awful lot of check and balance as a result of the Constitution.
Yes, Ms. Rankin. Yep.
So Sammy. Is this on?
Yeah.
What year are you in school right now, or what would you be going into?
Graduated by now.
And put that mic right up to your mouth.
I would have graduated. This year I was a senior, so I should have been graduated by now.
And how much more schooling do you have to go to get that diploma?
I just have to catch up 2 more credits and then I should be done. But yeah, but the way this A+ program is it don't really explain how to help you. It gives you a study and it tells you just to read it over, but it don't really explain what you're doing. It just says try this and this and this. And so with me, with my whole experience, I've been out of education for about a good 3 years. So it's kind of hard for me to catch up. And when they, with this A+ program, it's just throwing you in there and telling me what I have to do. And with my mind, it's, I haven't been that far ahead yet, so I'm trying to catch up.
When you say they tell you to here and here and here, do you have choices in that? Or is just a list of things that you must complete?
It's like a, so it's a program and it has a class on it, and then you click on the class and it just has the lessons and you have to go through lesson by lesson.
Is it easy for you to use technologically?
Yeah, the computer part's nice. It'd just be easier for a little bit of help on it. Because you're on your own on that program, really.
Do you feel that you're self-directed enough to complete a program like that? And for 2 units, how long would it take you?
I'm stuck on English right now, and I really need help with English, so it'd probably take me about a week or two.
And how many units would that complete for you?
Probably, I got 50 to do, so maybe about 20, 25, about half unit.
Half of what your requirements are to graduate, you could have in
a week,
few weeks?
Yeah.
A week? Why aren't you sitting in front of that computer right now? I wish you the best of luck with what you're doing. You're so close. I hope you finish.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Mr. Hoff?
Yeah, just to clarify, we will not be using the A+ curriculum as part of either one of the schools. We're looking at Odysseyware, Edgenuity, Khan Academy classes, a multitude of courses that offer. First of all, they're all prescriptive, so you take a pretest, and if you already know some of the lessons, you don't have to repeat them. And then again, to Ms. Forrest's concern, the teachers will be available pretty much from 9 in the morning to 9 at night. There will be a teacher available online or by phone or whatever, so if you're sitting there working on it and you get stuck, you pick up the phone or you type in a chat, and you're immediately in contact with an academic teacher of record to help you through that.
Are they Skyped in too? I mean, do they get the visual?
Yes, we can do that. And again, that's part of that, why we can do 1 to 200. And I was just going to say, when my daughter was in Columbine, they staffed it at 1 to 150 in a brick and mortar school. So, but again, they're not doing lessons plannings because the curriculum does that. They're not grading a lot of the stuff because the curriculum does that. So they have that time to spend with the students instead.
But even so, Randy, I do believe that he was basically saying, if I had a person next to me,
right, and we will have a person next to him, in addition to the life coach, which is there every day for those students. And that's something that even brick and mortar schools typically don't have, somebody there whose sole job is to work with that student. And that's a 1 to 30 ratio, because you can't work with more than 30 students at the intensity that it requires. So we believe when you look at the overall staffing ratios between the life coaches and the teachers, it's probably lower than your typical brick and mortar school.
Well, may I just make one? The research says that with very vulnerable students, it's even as low as 7 students to 1 teacher. And I know, I mean, Mr. Meriden, I know that you care a lot. I mean, anybody who keeps up with kids 3 years after they leave school, I give my, you know, I bow down to you and say that's great. But the necessity of having people, of having humans, and not just any human, I mean, humans that are receptive and are warm, I think is super important. And I hope that somehow, I do wish you you know, the best of luck because of the kids. And but I do think that you should consider having more teachers that are there. And I would say even listening to a voice over the phone. Have those teachers on the phone directly with, as opposed to, you know, writing. I think we do better, we hear better also. A phone, you hear other things than in a machine. And you may not even, a machine may not, when you're writing, is different than when you're hearing and listening. So,
if I may. Like I said, those teachers are available by phone. The student just has to pick up the phone and say, hey, I've got a question. And from 9 to 9 instead of just from 8 to 3 as in a typical building.
Dr. Scheffel.
I just had a question about the whole data privacy piece. I think you use, is it Maestro? Is that the name of it, the student information system?
Yes.
Can you speak to the privacy issues and its compliance with state law and providing, you know, elements of data that you're collecting and that whole piece on data privacy?
Yeah. Maestro is a Bocavox product. It's been around for many years. We've been using it through RMDA and through Goal Academy. Most of us were formerly associated with Goal Academy for several years. It meets all the FERPA requirements and
state
data privacy.
Requirements.
State requirements, yes.
All right, thank you.
Okay, further questions? Yes, Ms. Goff?
Very quickly, because you might have answered part of it. I was just, and this is for online, multi-district in general kinds of questions. You mentioned Edgenuity and then the open source is something different. But how is there a standard schedule, timeline for reviewing of and then doing? I know, the department has some responsibilities now that are. Around data, just as one part of that. But is there an in-district or in-program system of going through the software or the any open resources that you all choose to use so you're short-term enough to be keeping up with everything? I'm just curious about that.
Sure. Even in our district, we have that review that's happening definitely around the UIP planning part of that. Part of the question that may answer that is making sure it's aligned to state standards. And that's the key component is when you purchase programs, you want to make sure that it has that stamp of approval, that it has the Colorado, that it covers the Colorado state standards. That's the number one thing that we always look at. And we do have an annual review process for that through our board and then also through our district accountability, which they would be participating in that process.
Okay.
That's a very good question. Yeah.
And just briefly, we are constantly reviewing online curriculum because they all change so frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just, I know we've learned a lot of that through our other online, anyone who's doing online. I guess of interest to us right now and everybody is how are our state's new data laws, privacy, security, use of, how are they being. It's not early in the process yet, but how is everybody adjusting to whatever they see as changes to that? And it applies to everybody who's using software. So I just wondered how you have in the past and how that does impact smaller districts to begin with, and then you have some specialized programs that are real. We're all part of the big bathtub of these concerns, but it's interesting.
And I'll speak on the district side of things. Part of the requirements in the application was that there is a consistent site on district that will house student records. And so when we talk about student records being kept and maintained, so one of the things that we are very aware of is if, let's say, for example, if Summit continues to be Summit, we still have the responsibility to house and to maintain those records as we would do our own personal records of the kids that are in our building. So that would be the number one thing first.
I really, at the very beginning of the question, then I'll let us go. The just the instructional software, that's kind of where I wanted to go first, is How difficult is it to keep it up? To know that it's being, that it's good, it works, it's coming from a constantly reputable right. source of, you know.
I say we reviewed probably a good 6 to 8 different curriculum vendors before making decisions this year, and we're constantly evaluating because, like I say, what the best program is this year may not be the best one next year.
Right, right.
For your interest, one of the things we liked about Edgenuity was the extensive foreign language offerings that they provided.
Thank you. Well, I was going to say, if I had time and energy to do over, I'd be in that dance academy program so fast. Thank you. And
I wouldn't.
Luck, Sam.
Yes, Dr. Scheffel. Yeah.
I just had one final question. This is more for Misty. I was just thinking, in terms of what we usually get for, since we're going to vote on this today, are we missing, it seems like we're missing the budget for the alternative ed campus and the contract with Los Animas. Do we have everything we typically have to vote on this? Because I'm looking at the attachments.
So my understanding, Dr. Scheffel, yes, is that I went over this with staff over the last week, and that everything that's on board docs is typically what we have in that. I believe it's included in the application,
yes,
and should be posted.
The budget and the draft contract are part of the appendices for both applications.
And I know that there's about 16 different documents there, and they're a bit difficult to navigate, so we'll try to compile things a little bit differently maybe in the future. So the appendices are separate from the application as listed in board docs.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, further discussion. Ms. Goines, do you have your performance indicators in your contract that you'll evaluate on an annual basis?
Yes, we do. One of the things that...
We don't need to know the details, just you have them there and you think they're adequate to provide a standard for review?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Further discussion? Ms. Birdsall, it's been moved and seconded for the approval. Would you call the roll, please?
Board Member Flores.
I'm going to abstain.
She can abstain.
No, to be one of the later votes.
Unless they change the board.
I honestly do not recall what the procedures say about abstention, what the state board procedures say.
I think they're silent, if I remember correctly.
No. It says no. Every documentation that we have used says no, and that passing doesn't really apply to us either.
That's a combination of how statute's interpreted, but also our what we have as operating procedures.
Chair will rule that Dr. Flores can abstain if she so chooses. Please continue the roll call.
Board Member Goff.
Yes.
Board Member Mazanek?
Yes.
Board Member Rankin?
Yes.
Board Member Scheffel?
Yes.
Board Member Schroeder?
Yes.
Chairman Durham?
No. That motion is adopted on a vote of 5-1 with one abstention. Okay. We'll proceed now to the legislative update. All right, yes.
Can't do that.
You have a nice legislative report, and you include the special session for us and all that that's coming.
Oh, I have to, well, I didn't bring my crystal ball with me, but I will try.
All right.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, nice to see you all, as always. So at this point in the process, obviously we've just finished up a session, and the next one seems far away, although as the chair points out, there is a small possibility, in my opinion, of a special session. I think if that gets called, it would primarily deal with some of the beer and liquor selling issues. Again, this is just Jennifer Mello's opinion and prediction. I think that it is unlikely that the hospital provider fee issue would be addressed in a special session, but I could be wrong about that. So we will see how that turns out. So, you know, as we go through the session, we talk about a whole bunch of bills, and your ledge contacts do a lot of work reading the bills and looking at all of them on an individual basis. Now we come to the point where it's all said and done. And at this point where it's all said and done, what I can tell you is there are 13 bills that passed that have some sort of impact on the department or the State Board of Ed. Overall, I will tell you, and with the exception of the data privacy bill, which of course you all were a really important part of, it is a pretty small, modest group of proposals that went into effect this year. In fact, there's only there's a 0.5 FTE that has been added to the department. And in terms of kind of dollars coming into the department to support the work that the department does, it's only $44,000. Now, there are a couple of grant programs that are larger than that. There's a $1 million incentive to complete career development courses. That was House Bill 1289 that did pass. But those are dollars that will go right back out the door in the form of grants. House Bill 1222, which you all supported, which was the Supplemental Blended Online Learning Bill, has a $480,000 fiscal note. Again, those dollars don't stay at the department. They kind of head back out to accomplish the work. So that's kind of the big picture overview of what all that hue and cry and fuss and muss boiled down to is 13 bills, 0.5 FTE, and $44,000 in a way. There's lots of ways you could look at it. And I do want to acknowledge that I'm not going to talk in detail about the data privacy bill today because I know there are other conversations happening and other agenda items, but I want to note the significance of that bill for a variety of reasons. I mean, one, I think the board, I know the board had a very key leadership role in that. Both Representative Lundeen and Representative Garnett and Senator Hill have continued to acknowledge the strong role that the board and the department played in passing that legislation. And you all have directed your staff to be quite vigorous in this area. They already are doing a lot of work. This adds to that workload in the sense of all the stuff they're already doing. They're going to keep doing more as directed by this bill. So it is a significant piece of legislation in any number of ways. It has been hailed in some media reports as the strongest data privacy bill in the entire country. And I haven't done the research, but I would bet, I never bet more than a quarter, so I'm not a very fun person to bet with. But I would bet that it is the only data privacy bill in the entire country that passed unanimously at every step of the way. There was not a single no vote against this bill at any point in the process. So to just go into a small bit of detail on a couple